You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
As a longtime foreign correspondent, I've worked in lots of places, but nowhere as important to the world as China. I'm Jane Perlez, former Beijing bureau chief for The New York Times. Join me on my new podcast, Face Off, U.S. versus China, where I'll take you behind the scenes in the tumultuous U.S.-China relationship. Find Face Off wherever you get your podcasts.
The corporate world is like the ocean. It's alluring, but it's also full of deadly creatures that can shred you to pieces.
It becomes kind of like a Game of Thrones political arena where everyone's trying to murder you to get your job.
My family doesn't come from corporate background, so I didn't have any sort of guidance in that.
This is not your typical work podcast.
Sometimes you need to be empathetic. And then there are times that you ask for input, but you don't really give a shit.
Listen to the Ambie Award-nominated podcast, Surfing Corporate.
Stretch opportunity. What is this, yoga class? Get out of here.
This is Kick-Ass Politics. I'm Ben Mathis. Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible.com. Audible has over 180,000 audiobooks available to download for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And right now, Kick-Ass Politics listeners can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial. Just go to audibletrial.com/kickasspolitics or click on the sponsor link on our webpage at kickasspolitics.com and go get your free audiobook. Submitted for your approval. One morning, your alarm clock fails to go off and now you're late for work. You have a backup alarm on your iPhone, but your phone doesn't seem to be charged. You try to shave, but your electric razor doesn't work either. As you rush to get ready for work, you turn on the radio. Nothing comes out. You throw on your clothes and hurry downstairs to microwave some breakfast. The microwave, useless. So you forego breakfast and hop in your car, but the ignition won't start. That's when you look down your driveway and see cars stopped in the middle of the street. Your neighbors standing in their front yards in confused disbelief, just like you. And just then, a 747 drops straight out of the sky and crashes. Are you entering the Twilight Zone? No. You're experiencing an EMP, or electromagnetic pulse. Hi, folks. I'm Ben Mathis, and welcome to Kick-Ass Politics. While it may sound like science fiction, EMP is a real phenomenon and a serious threat to our very way of life. A naturally occurring EMP caused by a solar flare or a man-made EMP attack from a nuclear detonation have the potential to destroy the entire U.S. electrical grid, causing every conceivable failure from a computer crash to radioactive meltdowns at our nuclear reactors. And the scariest thing about it is that the U.S. government has done virtually nothing to protect Americans from this very real and increasingly likely threat. So today, I'm going to talk to Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. He's the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security and the Director of the U.S. Nuclear Strategy Forum. He served on the Congressional EMP Commission, and he's the author of Apocalypse Unknown, The Struggle to Protect America from an Electromagnetic Pulse Catastrophe. Dr. Pry will tell us what an EMP is, just how bad it could be, and which of our country's enemies are actively working to weaponize EMP against the United States and completely destroy our way of life. He'll also tell us why NORAD recently made the decision to move its headquarters back into the underground facility at Cheyenne Mountain in Colorado, despite Washington's seemingly lackadaisical attitude about the danger of EMP. So stay tuned, because what he has to say is going to scare the hell out of you.
From Hollywood to Washington, it's time for Kick-Ass Politics. And now here's your host, Ben Mathis.
Today I have Dr. Peter Vincent Pry on the show. He's the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security, and he served on the Congressional EMP Commission. He's here to sound the alarm on the growing threat of EMP. Dr. Pry, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
It's strange to me that EMP seems to get very little coverage on the media, and I suspect that most Americans aren't even familiar with the concept. So first, walk our listeners through it. What exactly is an electromagnetic pulse?
Well, an EMP can be caused by man or by nature. It can be caused by a nuclear weapon or by non-nuclear weapons. And what it is essentially is it's like a radio wave. It's like a super energetic radio wave that's got so much energy in it that it will destroy electronics and electronic systems. The EMP itself is, if it comes from nature or comes from a nuclear weapon, you know, is harmless to people in its direct effects, you know, can pass harmlessly through your body. But it's the electronics and the indirect effects that can end up as a civilization quite literally by destroying the electronic infrastructures like the power grid and the telecommunication systems, transportation systems, business and finance, food and water. Everything depends directly or indirectly on electricity. And when you lose that technology, you know, we can't support that many people anymore. The EMP Commission, in which I served, estimated that a year-long blackout caused by a nuclear or natural EMP catastrophe could kill up to 9 of 10 Americans through starvation, disease, and societal collapse.
9 out of 10 Americans in 1 year.
Yeah, and it's really common sense if you think about it. I mean, to try to cast your mind, imagination back to the time before we had an electric grid. You know, and that brings you back to before World War One. Well, back then, 75% of us were farmers, and almost everybody was no more than one generation removed from pioneer stock. Everybody knew how to hunt and fish, and they did to supplement the family diet pretty much. So if you think about, well, what would happen if you took away that technology and you had 100 million people left, to try to keep alive? Unless all of those people, mostly city dwellers, could learn to become survivalists in a big hurry, they're going to die of starvation, disease, and the chaos.
Right. It would be complete anarchy, I guess.
We've got over 100 nuclear reactors in the country, you know, that would go Fukushima. Radioactive fallout would be over vast swaths of the eastern United States, where most of the population lives. Natural gas explosions and firestorms in cities would result from the EMP. The chemical spills, there would be catastrophic consequences from the blackout. The safety mechanisms that are built into complex chemical factories and nuclear reactors and other things. Airplanes flying into the sky. You'd lose 500,000 people almost immediately, you know, from airliners crashing. You know, at any given time, there's about 500,000 people in flight over the air. And at least in a nuclear EMP event, all those planes would be at risk.
And cars would be affected, too. Cars wouldn't work either, huh?
Sure. You know, cars wouldn't start. Now, the particular vulnerability of an automobile would depend on where it's located. You know, for instance, if you were lucky and your car was parked in an underground garage, you know, it probably would survive and be able to run.
Oh.
But the gas stations wouldn't work, and the pipelines to bring gas to get gasoline, and the trucks that would bring gasoline to fire the gas stations wouldn't work either. So your car would work as long as you could put gas into it, and that would be a very significant challenge in a post-EMP environment.
So you're saying this would be a little bit worse than not getting cell reception?
Yes, absolutely. This wouldn't be, you know, when you say the word blackout, a lot of people, because people have lived through blackouts, short blackouts,
right.
You know? And they don't know what it would be like to have a protracted blackout. The people who lived through Hurricane Katrina have some idea, you know, where the area around New Orleans was blacked out for many months. We were able to bring food and water into Katrina. You know, the military, you know, brought in medical equipment, stuff like that. If the whole country were in blackout and suffering, industrial calamities, that wouldn't be possible. You know, it wouldn't be possible to count on what we call the edge effect. That is, there are areas around the disaster, like around a hurricane area, where we can go in and rescue them because the whole country isn't affected at once. Makes a big difference when the whole country is basically in blackout and in a catastrophe. There is nobody who can come to the rescue then.
Now, there are two types of EMP. Yeah. There are naturally occurring EMP caused by solar flares, right?
That's right.
And then there's the idea of a man-made EMP, which would be caused by a nuclear detonation. Tell me more about the difference between the two, and particularly in terms of the effect that each one has.
Well, let's start with a natural EMP, which is easier to understand. Basically, EMP 101, is that a moving magnetic field will generate a current in a wire. And you know this when you go to start your lawnmower. If you have one of those lawnmowers that still has a cord on it, you pull on the cord and it causes a magneto to spin. This is a cluster of magnets and it causes a moving magnetic field. And this induces a current in the wire surrounding the magneto, and it creates a little EMP in the form of a spark that you can see in your spark plug. Now, the Earth is a giant magnet, and it's surrounded by a magnetosphere. It's got a north and south pole, and it's surrounded by a magnetosphere. And when a solar storm, a solar flare, hits the magnetosphere, it causes it to wobble around and move around, just the way you were moving around that magnetic field in your lawnmower heart when you were pulling on the cord. And this induces currents in wires on the surface of the Earth, particularly the long wires, because the natural EMP has a very long wavelength. And it has to, the antenna or whatever the object being affected, has to have a length of, about a kilometer or something like that. So it'll couple well into long things like power lines and the railroad tracks and natural gas pipelines, anything that's made of metal that's really long. The natural EMP, because of this long wavelength, won't directly affect your automobile. It probably wouldn't directly affect airplanes, except perhaps the very largest ones. The personal computer on your desk and things of that sort would not be directly affected. However, okay. If it's plugged into the wall, if your personal computer is plugged into the wall, the EMP will follow the power lines into your house and get into your personal computer that way. And the big thing it does would be to crash the electric grid. And when you take down that electric grid, even if it didn't affect any of the other critical infrastructures directly, that's all it has to do, yeah. Because the other critical infrastructures will fail within about 72 hours after the electric grid is gone. They've only got, on average, about an emergency generating capability of about 72 hours. Then they run out of gas or whatever else is being used to fuel the emergency generators, and you're right where you would have been if it had been a nuclear EMP, which phenomenologically is a little different, but you both end up in exactly the same space. Now, the nuclear EMP does the same kind of an EMP as a geomagnetic storm does. In technical terms, we call this E3, or magnetohydrodynamic EMP. When you detonate the nuclear weapon in the magnetosphere, it causes the magnetosphere to wobble around, the same way that solar flare did. However, the nuclear weapon does something else in addition to that. It puts out a lot of gamma rays, and there's a thing called the Compton effect. Well, we won't get very scientific, but it basically knocks electrons off of atoms high in the atmosphere, and these spin around at the speed of light following the Earth's lines of geomagnetic force, and it creates Well, I've described it before, but it's a super energetic radio wave that has a very short wavelength. It's just maybe half a meter long. And this can couple into really small objects. And so that it does the same damage that a geomagnetic storm would do, but it also does additional damage, deeper damage, by getting deeper into the electronic systems and burning out computers and... It can stop automobiles. It can take down airplanes. Again, anything that's electronic that's bigger than a half a meter is a risk. And if it's plugged into a wall, even if it's smaller than a half a meter, it's at risk. So that's basically the difference between the two kinds. The nuclear EMP has got these other two factors to it. And it actually has a third factor to it. There's The electromagnetic shock wave that's produced by nuclear weapon that I just described is called E1. Then I described the natural EMP. That's called E3. Well, in between them, there's another thing called E2, and that's what lightning is like, all right? Well, a typical nuclear weapon will produce all three of these things, E1, E2, and E3. So you're getting hit by a waveform that is like super lightning, then like normal lightning, And then like a special kind of lightning that lasts a long time and puts a long fry on you. And unlike lightning, these are not point phenomena, but they cover huge areas, potentially the entire contiguous 48 United States.
So essentially we would be knocked back to the Stone Age overnight.
Yeah, that's right.
That's incredible. Now, you've been at the forefront, Peter, of sounding the alarm against the potential threat of man-made EMP. There are believed to be a number of countries that are actively working on weaponizing EMP, and correct me if I'm wrong, but as I understand it, they would only have to have one nuke in order to cause an EMP.
That's
right.
And it doesn't even have to be a special nuclear weapon. There are special nuclear weapons designed for this. We think North Korea's got one. We know the Russians and Chinese have it. It's called the super EMP weapon. And this is a weapon that is just designed basically to put out gamma rays. And it specializes in this E1 EMP that I just talked about, the electromagnetic shock wave that can couple into all kinds of things. But you don't need that kind of weapon, even a primitive nuclear weapon, a Hiroshima-type bomb, you know, would produce levels of EMP that would be deadly to electronic systems which are not hardened against EMP fields.
Now, they can't just detonate a suitcase nuke on the ground. It has to be at a certain altitude, right?
Yes, although I have to, as a footnote, even a nuclear weapon detonated on the ground is going to cause, it will create a different kind of EMP. It doesn't go out very far, but it can couple into power lines. Potentially, you could black out, you know, a significant large region, perhaps an entire state, you know, with a ground burst type weapon. Now, if it doesn't touch the ground at all, if it's an air burst weapon, then it won't produce any EMP or not much. It has to be above the atmosphere. It has to be up in the magnetosphere. The minimum altitude is 30 kilometers. You know, you want it, the object is to get the warhead at least 30 kilometers high. The higher you go, the more area you'll cover. You know, so if you do it at 200 kilometers over the center of the United States, you'll cover the whole country.
You could knock out the whole country at 200 miles.
Yeah.
Above the Earth's surface.
That's
wow.
right, with one weapon.
Well, a number of countries are working on this technology. They don't have to have a nuclear arsenal like Russia or China. They just need one nuke,
right.
And they can knock us out. So are we more concerned about Russia or China, or are we more concerned about the rogue nations like Iran and North Korea that have nothing to lose?
Most people are more concerned about Iran than they are about anybody else because of their self-destructive ideology. But Iran is unique in the modern world in that, you know, it has a medieval, religious, eschatological outlook where the mullahs who control that country don't really think in modern geostrategic terms about advancing the interests of the nation state in which they live. They see Iran and its people as serving this religious purpose of bringing back their 12th Imam, and their object is, even if they have to sacrifice the country, it'll be a good thing to do if in the end it means the spiritual triumph of Islam on this earth and after this earth. You know, their biggest focus is in a world that isn't on this world. You know, it's in the spiritual universe. And that's what all they're concerned about. That's why, you know, these guys don't mind sending children off to commit suicide by bombing. Iran is basically a nuclear truck bomb headed our way. So most people are most concerned about Iran because of its ideological issues. But I don't think we should underestimate the threat from the other countries either. You know, even though North Korea, for example, and its leader, Kim Jong-un, theoretically they're an atheist country, but within North Korea, Kim Jong-un is worshipped as a demigod. You know, we laugh at these stories about how Kim Jong-un does so well at playing golf. He, you know, has such a great golf store, and he's perfect at everything. You know, and that's humorous to us in the West. But, you know, that propaganda is being done because they're trying to brainwash their people and they're convincing them that this guy basically is God. And a state that a leader who wants to educate his people that he is God tends to have a bad habit of eventually starting to think that he is God. So I'm not very comfortable with North Korea having super EMP weapon either. To me, it's kind of a toss-up about who should I be more uncomfortable with, the mullahs or somebody like a Kim Jong-un who's Caligula in the third generation? And then we could go into China and Russia too, but, you know, one can come up with reasons to be very concerned about those countries too.
Yeah. Well, none of these guys are our friends, so do you want to be annihilated by the tin pot dictator, or do you want to be annihilated by a world power? Either way, same result. Well, we're going to take a quick break, and then I'll be back to talk more with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Back in a moment. This portion of the podcast is sponsored by Fiverr. That's F-I-V-E-R-R. You've heard me rave about Fiverr before. Fiverr is the world's largest online marketplace for services, with over 100 categories all offered at a fixed base price of just $5. Logo design, business consulting, marketing, business cards, stationery, web design, translation, proofreading, legal consulting, and just about any other service you can imagine, all offered at a base price of just $5. In fact, you know the announcer who does the intro to Kick-Ass Politics? I found him on Fiverr, a professional radio announcer to do our intro for just $5. And right now, when you go to kickasspolitics.com and click on the Fiverr ad on our sponsor page, you'll be showing your support for the show, and you'll get some great offers on services tailored to your needs. Whatever you need done, find it on Fiverr. And if you like Kick-Ass Politics and want to help keep us on the air, then please support the show by making a donation to our GoFundMe campaign at gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. Or go to the show website and click on the donate link. Your support will help keep us producing new and even more interesting programs in the future. That's gofundme.com/kickasspolitics. And now, back to the show. We're back, and I'm talking with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry about the growing threat of an EMP attack. And in the first half, we talked about the fact that the weaponization of EMP is not necessarily an exclusive club just reserved for major nuclear powers like China and Russia, but a number of small countries like Iran and North Korea have aggressive EMP programs as well, and they could pose an even larger threat to the U.S. So, Peter, let's say that Iran or North Korea managed to attain or build a nuclear warhead capable of the kind of EMP you've described. I'm not aware that either of those countries have long-range ICBMs capable of launching from their territory and hitting the U.S. So what would the delivery system for an EMP from one of those countries look like?
Well, the nightmare scenario from the Congressional EMP Commission was that you would launch a short or medium-range missile, like Iran's Shahab-3, for example. With a Shahab-3, you could actually reach the center of the United States and do that high-altitude EMP attack off of a freighter, say, you know, outside of our international waters, launching from, you know, the vicinity of New Orleans, you know, and you could get it up high enough and deep enough into the country to put an EMP field over the whole country. If you had a shorter-range missile, you know, you could still basically destroy the whole country, because one of the things that isn't understood, you don't really need to put the EMP field down everywhere. Really, all you've got to do is take down the eastern grid. You know, that generates 70% of our electricity, and most of our people live under the eastern grid. You know, even at a lower altitude, like 30 kilometers, which would cap on EMP field something equivalent to the northeastern part of the United States in size, if you can imagine that, that would collapse the whole eastern grid. There'd be cascading failures. It would destroy stuff immediately, everything within a radius of 600 miles under the EMP field. But more stuff would get destroyed outside the EMP field from the cascading consequences of that. You know, because what happens when you destroy transformers and, you know, the load has to go somewhere, and it goes to the part of the grid that isn't destroyed yet, and then those transformers get overloaded and they get destroyed. And so it has a rippling destructive effect to the system. This is how a falling tree branch caused the great Northeast blackout of 2003. You know, by causing rippling failures through the system. Now, if you used a nuclear weapon instead of a tree branch, the consequences would be much more protracted and severe. We've actually seen Iran practice that, where they have launched, you know, short-range missile off of a freighter. We've seen them use their mobile Shahab-3, which is, because it's a mobile missile, it would be well-suited to launch off a freighter, but they've conducted several tests to that look like they've been practicing fusing warheads for high-altitude detonation. And Dr. Graham, who had been the chairman of my EMP commission, you know, concluded that there's really no other explanation except that they were practicing EMP attacks with those Shahab-3 flights. Or even on a high-lift meteorological balloon. You don't even really need a missile to take out.
Oh, really?
Yeah, if you lofted it by balloon, wow, you could do it that way. Also, if you had any kind of an aircraft that could approach Mach 1, you can, if the pilot's willing to mm-hmm. commit suicide, you know, you can do a zoom climb and get yourself up above 30 kilometers that way. And perhaps most disturbing of all is, you know, during the nuclear crisis we had with North Korea, or a couple of months after it, it was back in 2013. And,
right.
I think he deliberately provoked a crisis so he could practice this new way of war. You know, because in the middle of that crisis, North Korea orbited a satellite over us. That's another way of doing it, where you could perhaps keep your fingerprints off the attack and do it anonymously. This concept was originally invented by the Soviets during the Cold War, and it's called a fractional orbital bombardment system. And what it is, you know, you use a missile, a space launch vehicle, basically. It looks like a peaceful space launch vehicle, and it looks like you're going to launch a satellite, but you've got a warhead hidden inside the satellite.
Huh.
And the idea is that, okay, this thing looks like a space launch vehicle, and then when it's launched, it goes on a satellite-type trajectory. So to us, it looks like, oh, it's just a satellite. And it's launching away from the United States. It goes away from the United States, passes over the South Polar region, then comes up at us from the other side of the world, coming up from the south. Because we don't have, even today, you know, we don't have any ballistic missile early warning radars or missile interceptors facing south. So we're blind to that side.
Right, it's a relic of the Cold War. We're expecting attack
exactly,
from Russia.
Exactly. And that's why the Soviets invented this thing during the Cold War. But even after they did, we've neglected to shore up our southern defense. And both North Korea and Iran have practiced orbiting satellites in exactly that trajectory. In fact, one of the satellites, the KSM-3, it's a North Korean satellite, orbits over us regularly at the optimum altitude for putting an EMP field down on all 48 contiguous United States. Suppose there was a nuclear warhead hidden in that satellite right now, and if they detonated it and they took out our critical infrastructures and all the rest, would we know that that was North Korea that made the attack? After all, they launched that satellite several years ago. It was launched in 2012. Having been in the intelligence community, I can just imagine the arguments that would be made to the president to not attack North Korea, because we don't know for sure if they did it or not. You know, we could say, well, maybe it was the Iranians or the Chinese or the Russians who did it off a freighter or using some other means to try to, provoke us into attacking the North Koreans. And so they would escape retaliation. It would be hard to figure out, especially after... You know,
it might not matter because we might not be able to retaliate.
Yeah, we might not be able to retaliate, and our intelligence probably would not be working very well either, you know, when you're going into a situation of complete blackout. All those sensors, the data we rely on from spy satellites and all the rest, you know, would be taken away from us from the EMP attack.
So essentially an Iran could level the playing field in one fell swoop. Basically, we would be knocked back to the Stone Age just like them. Or the other thing is, I suppose, you know, God forbid, if we had another world war eventually with China or Russia, I have to imagine that their first priority would be to do a Pearl Harbor-like strike on our electrical grid. And then once they've done that, we'd essentially be, like I said, kicked back to the Stone Age and completely defenseless.
Well, you're absolutely right. And you've actually anticipated... what military theorists in Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran are thinking. Because there's a new way of warfare. They call it a revolution in military affairs. It was originally conceived by the Russians. It's to use nuclear EMP attack in combination with cyber attack, and physical sabotage, and non-nuclear EMP weapons, and maybe even to exploit the weather, like to make an attack against the grid on a hot day, you know, wow, which puts natural stress on the grid or out of a hurricane. Yes, and for example, in General Viktor Slepchenko's book, No Contact Wars, he describes this new way of warfare. And the idea here is that it makes high technology armies and navies obsolete, because you can go around them by attacking the unprotected civilian infrastructures, and particularly the electric grid, and cause it, and destroy the civil foundation of the society, its industrial base and all the rest. And you can't fight a war very long, even if you've got a high-tech army left over, when you've lost your electric grid and all the other critical infrastructures have collapsed. You know, Russia sees it as a revolution in military affairs that would enable them to decisively triumph over the West if they had to get into a war. You know, by using just one nuclear weapon or one nuclear weapon against every adversary that they faced.
I think that's what people don't realize about the Iranian threat is they only have to be right once. They don't have to build up a Soviet Union-like arsenal.
Right.
They just need one, and then they can destroy our entire existence here.
And we even know that that's why they want the bomb, to do an EMP attack, because they've written about it. The EMP Commission, you know, found the military writings showing that they know about EMP, that they plan to make that EMP attack. Congressman Trent Franks, who's been a leader in Congress on this, read a little bit into the congressional record from a recently translated Iranian military textbook that is all about this revolution in military affairs I was telling you about, with a great focus on a nuclear EMP attack to take out the United States. I mean, this thing describes how they would do it and basically endorses this as the way to win a future war. So it's not just a theoretical thing that they could do this. We know from their own writings and from their missile launches and exercises that this is what they're planning to do. This is why North Korea and Iran both want nuclear weapons. It really doesn't make any sense to put all that money into developing weapons and missiles if you're trying to think of the Cold War-type nuclear strategies, because as you correctly pointed out, you know, there's no way they could ever compete with us, either at the technological level or in terms of numbers. But they don't have to this way. You know, this way they can... All they need is that one warhead. Just land one warhead on target, and it's a big target, you know, to be able to get one to detonate 200 kilometers above the United States. And it's hard to miss a big target like the whole continental United States. That creates, for the first time in history, a situation where failed states like Iran and North Korea can actually take out the most successful societies on Earth and prevail over them.
Well, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, thank you for coming on the show and waking people up to this very real threat.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, folks, this is a serious enough issue that I decided to break this interview with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry into two parts. In the next episode, we're going to talk about why you haven't heard more about EMP from Washington and the media. And Dr. Pry will reveal what major industry is aggressively lobbying politicians to ignore the threat of EMP. It's the same industry that's behind a concerted effort in the media to discredit the science behind EMP and convince Americans that EMP is just the stuff of movies and conspiracy theories. So you don't want to miss part two. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast on iTunes so you can automatically get new episodes as they become available. And while you're there, I'd appreciate it if you left us a review. That helps a lot with the show's rankings on iTunes. And if you like Kick-Ass Politics and want to help keep us on the air, then please support the show by making a donation to our GoFundMe campaign at GoFundMe.com/KickAssPolitics. Or go to the show website and click on the donate link. Your support will help keep the lights on over here and will be greatly appreciated. That's GoFundMe.com/KickAssPolitics. As always, I welcome your comments, questions, and suggestions at comments@kickasspolitics.com or leave a voicemail on the toll-free listener hotline at 844-KA-POLITICS. Be sure to tune in to part two, where I'll continue my discussion on EMP with Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Until then, I'm Ben Mathis, and thanks for listening to Kick-Ass Politics. Kick-Ass Politics is a trademark of Mathis Entertainment, Inc.